Hello, here is your KVNF Regional Newscast for Monday, June 17th. From Capitol Coverage, Governor Jared Polis has signed an executive order aimed at increasing Colorado's low vaccination rates. KVNF's Scott Franz has more.
Federal health officials say the country is experiencing the largest outbreak of measles since 1992. Polis is not mandating vaccines. He wants a public education campaign for parents with, quote, vaccine hesitancy and incentives for doctors offering immunizations.
We really view this as the third way between the government forcing people to get shots, which is counterproductive, and simply allowing these rates to go down, which is counterproductive to the public health and will result in people dying.
During the legislative session, Polis threatened to veto a proposal that would have made it harder for parents to opt their children out of vaccinations. Lawmakers who sponsored the failed measure are praising the executive order. I'm Scott Franz at the State Capitol.
Four states, Utah, Wyoming, Colorado, and New Mexico, have watched shares of their water from the Colorado River flowing downstream for nearly a century. But now they want to claim that promised water. In the last part of our series, The Final Straw, KUER reporter Judy Face explores the drive behind a massive water pipeline in southwestern Utah.
Gary Turner is facing a busy afternoon at his turf farm on the outskirts of booming St. George. Customers are calling, even before he can finish greasing his harvester.
They're all looking for grass.
But you know how much Omar wants?
Red dirt and the surrounding Red Rock country of Washington County are a technicolor contrast to Turner's crop. Acres of emerald green lawn grass that glows in the spring sunshine.
There's nothing more greener for this planet than grass.
Suburban ramblers and apartments sprout outside Turner's 114-acre farm. It's a sign this is one of the nation's fastest-growing metro areas.
I mean, we grow houses better than we can grow any other commodity.
Turner irrigates with a virgin river. It's the area's sole water source. But he says if the people moving here want lawns, they need the Lake Powell pipeline.
We absolutely have to have it. I don't know any other option.
The pipeline would be like dipping a 140-mile straw into Lake Powell halfway across the state. It would cost billions of dollars and be paid for by Utahns. The water would support nearly 100,000 new households, including future turf customers.
It's absolute madness.
Nick Scow of the Utah Rivers Council says too much Colorado River water has already been promised to too many people.
The state of Utah would have you believe there's plenty of water for all of these projects, as though we're living in the good old days.
When the river was gushing and it kept Lake Powell and Lake Mead full, now 40 million people rely on that stored water, and their demands and drought have strained this vital supply.
We are way beyond the budget of what the Colorado River can deliver. And when you just look at how much water is in the river and how much everyone else wants to take out, it's just not there.
But the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission is proceeding with Utah's application to draw 86,000 acre-feet from Lake Powell. It's the largest of 9 proposed water projects in the Upper Basin states.
And we're up here looking the other way, whistling and pretending we don't notice.
Scow says pipeline proponents are also putting whole communities at risk by ignoring climate change. Scientists predict the Colorado's flow could be nearly one-third lower by mid-century. Instead of a pipeline, opponents say the smartest and cheapest solution is conservation.
Found us.
Lisa Rutherford lives in a St. George suburb where that idea is already embraced. Her front yard is red rock and low water plants. It's the stuff of nightmares for someone who makes a living growing sod.
We took out our front grass in 2013 and just have a little piece of grass in the backyard.
Rutherford tracks the pipeline for the nonprofit Conserve Southwest Utah.
We don't think there will be the water. We do not think that we need the water.
But Rutherford's partner, Paul Van Dam, says the problem has deeper roots, a conviction that Nevada, Arizona, and California are taking precious resources that belong to Utah.
That's almost part of the DNA of people out here. It's just like treason if you don't fight for the water that is your water.
A longtime soldier in that fight is Mike Styler, who recently retired as director of Utah's Department of Natural Resources. Before that, he was one of the state lawmakers who voted to begin the battle for the pipeline.
What they need to do, the lower states, is use their right that's allocated to them
And we will use our right that's allocated to us, and that water is there.
Back at the turf farm, Turner's harvester is peeling 2x5-foot strips from the ground, rolling them up, and stacking them on pallets. Two tractor trailers await loading for delivery tomorrow morning, and contractors with pickups and trailers are standing by. Turner doesn't want this market to dry up.
The good book says that the meek shall inherit the earth, but they won't get no water. They have to fight for their water.
And to Turner, the answer to Utah's water problem is a no-brainer. I'm Judy Faze in southwestern Utah.
Scientists and engineers are coming to Colorado to address a host of threats to habitat and water supplies facing the Intermountain West. Eric Galatis has the story.
The Rocky Mountain Stream Restoration Conference comes to Estes Park next week, bringing watershed experts and engineers to the state. Rush Schumacher, Colorado State University's climatologist, says it's an opportunity for policymakers to look at a host of challenges facing the Intermountain West, such as extreme weather events like the Big Thompson and 2013 floods in Lyons and Boulder. Schumacher says mitigating flash floods is especially important along the Front Range, where moisture from the Gulf of Mexico pours down through steep canyons.
Clearly, extreme precipitation and flooding has always happened, but there's also kind of growing evidence that the warming climate and more moisture in the atmosphere is leading to more extreme precipitation.
He says hotter and more destructive wildfires also need to be addressed. Burn scars don't absorb water, so heavy rains can send crippling debris flows into streams, affecting fish habitat and drinking water. He adds, while population growth and development in floodplains have put structures and people at risk, cities and counties can restore flows in ways that limit flood damage and even capture water for drier days. Dave Rosigan with Wildland Hydrology speaks on Tuesday about natural channel design, which he describes as a four-stage approach that emulates stable waterways to accommodate water needs during drought as well as 100-year floods. He says streams can be stabilized, for example, by adding willows and cottonwoods, which send their roots into wood workers sink into the riverbanks.
Very natural and aesthetically pleasing as opposed to hard control with high walls of concrete. And the use of toe wood is really helpful for not only reducing bank erosion, but really helps for fish habitat.
Rosigan adds, natural channel design costs about 10 cents on the dollar compared with hard control designs that he says end up being temporary after the next 100-year storm. The conference, organized by Resource Institute, starts Tuesday, June 18th at the Stanley Hotel. This is Eric Galatis reporting for the Colorado News Connection.
And that was your KVNF regional newscast for Monday, June 17th. For KVNF News, I'm Eric Gould. Thanks so much for listening.